Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 4. Sakhi charye kadot patya.
Sakhi charye kadot patya.
Putana nanda gokula.
Putana nanda gokula.
Yoshitva mayayat mana.
Yoshitva mayayat mana.
Pravishat kamacharini. Sakhi charye karot patya.
Sakhi charye karot patya.
Putana nanda gokula.
Putana nanda gokula.
Yoshitva mayayatmana.
Yoshitva mayayatmana.
Pravishat kamacharini.
Pravishat kamacharini.
Sa that Putana.
That Putana.
Pichari.
Pichari.
Who travels in outer space.
Space.
Notice this is aluksamas. The word K is in the locative case. It's still a compound. Moving in the sky. Ekada.
Ekada.
Once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Utpatya.
Utpatya.
Was flying.
Putana,
Putana, the demon Putana,
Nanda Gokula,
at the place of Nanda Maharaj,
Gokula,
Yoshitva, converting into a very beautiful woman. And that's a noun that's been turned into a verb. Yoshit is a noun. It means beautiful woman. But this is as if it's a verb, Yoshi, with twa ending. This is an unusual form. No, it's gerund, made out of a noun. But that means the noun has been turned artificially into a verb, and then gerund form has been added. Mayaya.
Mayaya.
My mystic power.
My mystic power.
Atmana,
Atmana,
herself,
herself.
Pravishat,
Pravishat,
entered,
entered.
Kamacharini,
Kamacharini,
one who could move according to her own desire. You may think you can move according to your own desire, but can you jump up in the sky on a stick and fly somewhere? Then, you know, she really can go where she wants. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Once upon a time, Putana Rakshasi, who could move according to her desire and was wandering in outer space, converted herself by mystic power into a very beautiful woman and thus entered Gokula, the abode of Nanda Maharaj. Purport, Rakshasis learn mystic powers by which they can travel in outer space without machines. In some parts of India, I think this is Assam, there are still such mystical witches, Baba Yaga, who can sit on a stick and use it to fly from one place to another in a very short time. This art was known to Putana. Assuming the feature of a very beautiful woman, she entered Nanda Maharaj's abode, Gokula. Mystic powers. A demon empowered to travel as she likes and to assume any form. It says here she turned herself into a beautiful woman by her free choice. Well, she was a woman before. By implication, she was an ugly woman. An old, ugly witch. This is what the Asura Bhava does to you. Our Siddhanta is that nobody's basically an Asura. There's no such thing as a tamasic jiva. Jivas get covered by the influence of Prakriti, the material energy. Yaya samohitam. What is it? Jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. Padopi manote anartam tatkritam chabi padyate. So, I won't mention any sampradayas, but in our other sampradaya, they interpret this as only applying to the sattvic jivas, because it's para, that the jiva is transcendental. But in this other opinion, not all the jivas are transcendental. Only some jivas are sattvic. Our understanding, taking the literal word of the Upanishad, the jiva is Vishuddha sattva. All jivas, any jiva, is pure. And it's only by circumstance of being covered by the material energy that we are carrying around a veneer of some other mode. Scrape off that veneer, underneath is Vishuddha sattva. No matter how bad the person is, even Stalin or Hitler, you could somehow remove his coverings, and they're going through hellish suffering now to purify them, Mr. Stalin and Mr. Hitler, in some animal form, in some hellish condition. And they're going to be gradually revived back to their sattvic condition. Because every living entity is basically sattvic. But when you allow yourself or succumb to the influence of this asura bhava, this demoniac, rebellious mentality, then it does strange things to you. It makes you want to harm other people. For profit or just for pleasure. This is abhichara. The endeavor to harm someone else, especially by performing sacrifice or by mystic power. The tantrics are usually what we call tantrics. Tantra means general literature, supplementary literature other than the original Vedas, that are especially meant for those who are not qualified to study the Vedas. Non-brahmanas, outcasts, shudras, they cannot study the Vedas. So for them, especially, the tantras are meant. And since in Kali Yuga, almost everybody is outcast, the tantras are very prominent. But tantra is not just, tamasic. There's also sattvic tantra. That is the Vaishnav Pancharatra. There's also tantra. But when we talk about tantra, we're talking about the tamasic tantras. Tamasic tantrics. And their motivation is usually power. These tantrics are usually people who are disenfranchised, are powerless, and this is their way to get power, by learning this mystic art of mostly controlling and doing harm to other people. So people will be afraid of you, and you can control them. They're not motivated by sex, they're not motivated by desire for knowledge or desire to become purified. They are motivated mostly by getting power. And they use and they employ this ability to harm other people. Prutana, her specialty is killing children. What profit is there in killing children? What are you going to do with, and what will it do for you? But you see, in politics, things are so corrupt, especially among demoniac politicians like Kamsa, that he employed Putana for practical purpose of going out and helping kill the children. This was the political agenda. We were going to kill all the children under 10 days of age, and we'll also not draw the line there, even if they're more than 10 days, let's just kill them anyway. And Putana is an expert, specialist in the field of killing children. So he called her in, although she was already on his staff. I don't know what personally you achieve, what you What good is it for you to kill children? Unless you like to eat them, what are you going to do with dead children? Although I can, you know, I don't mention what some of the things tantrics do with the dead bodies of children. But it's really not much gain to be had by it. But the political situation was so perverse, even before Kali Yuga began, that there was employment for such a specialist, baby killer. I know one story also from maybe not the most authoritative source, Amar Chitra Katak, comic book. A story about Rajput, you know, it's a comic book about the Rajputs and how stalwart they are and how they tolerate so many things. So one story about the queen, or not the queen, but the wife of the minister, and some enemy was going to assassinate the heir apparent prince. And the minister's wife knew about it, that this man is going to come in the night and murder the king's son. So she told her old son, she took the king's son and hid him, and told her own son to sleep in the prince's bed. And the assassin came and killed her son. So she sacrificed her son, you know, in order to save the prince. So here, you know, an assassin came killing children, another case of the same perverted engagement. Manifestation, what the asura-bhava or demoniac, the kinds of things that the demoniac spirit make us do, things against nature, against all decency. Unfortunately, we're living in Kali Yuga, where the demoniac spirit is very pervasive, hard to avoid. When there is order in society, when the world is not so much out of order, then although there is demoniac influence, it is kept segregated, apartheid. Now, keeping the bad elements apart. It's described somewhere that in the Satyayuga, demons and devotees live on separate planets. And sometimes they come invading from our outer space, but they're usually kept away on other planets. In the Treta Yuga, they live on the same planet, but on different continents, different countries, separated by the ocean. Thus we see that in Treta Yuga, Ravana had his kingdom across the ocean on some big island. In Dwarpa Yuga, the same country, but in different cities. We see when Rukmi, infected by the demoniac spirit, even though he's a brother of Rukmini, he, defeated by Krishna, vowed that he would not enter his father's capital. He went feeling like a demon. He decided to build his own city. Other demons like Banasura had his own city, Tejpur, or Pragjyotishpur, which I think is Guwahati. But that's Dwarpa Yuga. Demons and devotees live in different cities mostly. But in Kali Yuga, the same statement says they live in the same body. We're infected by the demoniac spirit just by being inhabitants of the Kali Yuga. Just like you walk down the street, you may be a strict vegetarian, but you can't help smelling people cooking meat. Fortunately, in this place, people don't cook meat. And therefore, you don't have to walk down the street and smell it, but elsewhere you do. And that meat is entering your body. So much for your strict vegetarian principles. In Kali Yuga, we're contaminated by everything. Devotees in the West, you know, they offer milk to the deities. They give the brahmacharis milk to drink. But unless they're getting it from their own cows, this is also contaminated. They put, I won't discuss what they put in it, what they make the cows eat, and then what they add afterwards to the so-called milk in America and other countries. And who knows in the big cities in India whether they're starting to do these things. Therefore, we should get our own cows. Everything is contaminated. You cannot keep the demoniac spirit out of your own body and out of your own mind. As long as you're in this world in Kali Yuga, the demoniac spirit is all pervasive. Therefore, we have to take shelter of Krishna's holy names and the Vaishnavas. Otherwise, we may not become out and out demons, but we'll be influenced by this demoniac spirit and we'll do perverse, abominable things. You cannot avoid it. If you're not, it's either pure devotional service or demoniac life. There's no in between. A kali kale nahi kon dharma. Vaishnava shastra e kohe marma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction recorded in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In this Kali Yuga, there is no religion, no religious principles. But there are plenty of religions. You can look in the almanac and see a list of hundreds, even thousands of denominations. 2,000 different versions of Protestant Christianity. And then probably 2,000 versions of Hinduism, too. Although it's not organized in the way the Christian churches are. Thousands of religions, as many religions as there are languages in the world. So plenty of religion, but there's no religiosity, there's no dharma. It's all hypocrisy. Nobody practices what they preach. Or they don't even preach anything. It's just social custom. E kali kali nahi kon dharma. This is a heavy statement coming out of the mouth of Lord Chaitanya. There is no religiosity. There's no dharma in Kali Yuga. Except Vaishnava Shastra. This is the only thing left of any real substance in the line of dharma in Kali Yuga. The Vaishnavas and the Vaishnava Shastra. Vaishnava means you can practice dharma, spiritual life, if you take advantage of the association of Vaishnavas. What do you do with a Vaishnava? Some people grab for the feet and demand blessings. That's how they deal with Vaishnavas. That's not the way. That is materialistic. That is not proper association with Vaishnavas. Just grab their feet and demand blessings. Get dust and get blessings on your head. That's not association. You're trying to use the Vaishnavas like you use everybody else. Doesn't work. Vaishnava means proper association with Vaishnavas. Tadvidi pranipatena paribhashnena sevaya. Approach them, offer yourself submissively as a student, not as a slave. You know, it's not that the guru is a slave master, that he collects disciples as material assets, you know, to form a power base. A guru is not a politician. That he, you know, he collects followers as a means for power and wealth. No, he accepts students, and it's his duty to train them up. Just like a parent has children, and it's his duty to raise those children. So a guru takes spiritual children, students, and is obliged to direct them back to Godhead by his teachings and instructions. One has to establish that I'm the disciple and you're the guru by bowing down. Just like you establish the protocol in picking up the phone by saying hello. And then the person who's calling you, there's a protocol for him too. He should announce who he is. And what, you know, otherwise, I know around here they don't. You pick up the phone and the person on the other side demands who you are, to know who you are. Yeah. But that's not that around the world, that's not the protocol. The protocol for establishing spiritual relationship is to bow down first of all. I'm not here to argue, I'm not here to do business, I'm not here to waste time. I'm putting my head on the floor and the rest of my body on the floor to announce that I want to be your student. Please teach me. And then ask some relevant questions. And then be ready to do service. This is the way to associate with Vaishnavas. Without taking advantage of that process, we can't avoid being demoniac. I don't say demons, but demoniac, influenced by demoniac spirit in Kali Yuga, no matter how good we want to be. Even if we are practicing Vaishnavas, if we give up the association of Vaishnavas, then we revert back to the demoniac spirit. And as Narottam Das Thakur says, Chadiya Vaishnava Sheva Nishtar Peyeshe Keva. Who can ever hope to be saved if he gives up the association, the service, not association only, but service to Vaishnavas? If you stop serving Vaishnavas, don't expect you will have any hope of being saved. And then the other half, Vaishnava Shastra. This is our shelter. This is the only place we can find any direction on how to live like a civilized human being in this Kali Yuga. How to avoid being demoniac. We must take guidance from the Vaishnava Shastra. There aren't that many Vaishnava Shastras. Especially since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recognizes those Shastras that teach pure bhakti. Mixed bhakti is not our program. Other sampradayas, they like to practice mixed devotional service. Karma Mishra, Jnana Mishra. But our acharyas say Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Kebalo Bishira Panda, Narottam Das. Simply pots of poison. So the Jnana Mishra bhakti is nectar mixed with poison. You want to drink that, go ahead. Jnana Mishra, Karma Mishra Bhakti. We don't acknowledge it as our program. Rupa Goswami doesn't even mention them in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So in the program of pure devotional service, we have to rise above these material motives. We have to take guidance. We have to serve the Vaishnavas and take guidance from those few scriptures that actually teach pure devotional service. Sanatana Goswami lists them in one commentary in the Brihadbhagavatamrita, one of his own comments. I don't know the exact list, I don't remember, about 6 or 7 books, and that's it, among all the thousands of Vedic literatures. The Bhagavatam, the Vishnu Purana, a good part of the Harivamsa, not the whole thing. Parts of the Padma Purana, parts of the Skanda Purana, the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, maybe a few other, one or two other Upanishads, and that's about it. Those are the Shastras that teach pure bhakti. And for us, not for the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even out of that list of 6, only 2 books are extremely important, the Gita and the Bhagavatam. Kimanyak Shastra Vistaray. What's the need for piles of other books? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, well, I'm quoting from the same sotra. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm sorry. That was the Bhagavatam. Yeah. There's only need for one scripture. Of course, we also take Bhagavatam. We don't stop only with Gita. There are many people in India who don't know anything about the Bhagavatam. It's just a name to them. And they think the book about Krishna is just the Gita. And, you know, they really don't have the capacity to absorb Bhagavatam or even approach it. Okay, for them, for those who can't handle the Bhagavatam, okay, Gita is there. And it's sufficient. There's no need, you know, to go beyond the Gita. You can go back to Godhead just with Bhagavad Gita. But especially if we're going to be preachers, we should be proficient in the Bhagavatam. The patient just has to read the basic instructions on the medicine. You know, hold the, you know, this asthma spray. Hold it like this and, you know, be sure you actually, you know, swallow, you know, hold it in your lungs for 10 seconds. Simple instructions for the patient. For the doctor, for him, there's a whole big brochure. that describes the toxic doses and how the chemical works inside the body system and so many things that the doctor should know. So the patient only has to be given a few simple instructions. But if you're going to be a doctor and help others, then you have to be expert. So for the expert training, Bhagavatam is there. And for serious students also. Two books, Gita and Bhagavatam. For those who can't handle such a big book, Gita is there. And not that we neglect the Gita because we have the Bhagavatam. Gita is not just, you know, a preliminary book or a second-rate book. Because it's simple and short, doesn't make it unimportant. Yakswayam, what is it? Sakshad Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmad Vinikshritam. It is emanated directly from the lotus mouth of Lord Padmanabha. So these are the most essential instructions. Not just for beginners. The Bhagavad Gita. So we should all memorize the Gita. Yeah, know it backwards and forward. Prabhupada said, even though I'm giving classes, I mean, this was the personal instruction to the former head of our Sanskrit department in the BBT. He told him that I'm giving classes on Srimad Bhagavatam. But notice, Prabhupada said, that I'm quoting the Gita constantly in my Bhagavatam classes. So if you want to become a preacher in our line, you should know the Gita very well for preaching purposes. Even though you're preaching Bhagavatam, to have enlightened, to help explain things to especially the general public, use the Gita. Be able to quote from the Gita to back up everything you say. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu promoted these two books. This is the basis of our spiritual practice and our spiritual knowledge. It's coming from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, we're receiving from our gurus, from Srila Prabhupada and previous acharyas, and the Goswamis who authored many books on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Those books are largely based on Srimad Bhagavatam. You want the nectar books, the original nectar book, and the source of all the other nectar is Srimad Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami may say things that aren't in the Bhagavatam, but he's basing it on the Bhagavatam. Magamareka bandho mad sangin mad guru mad mahatana mad nistarka mad bhagya mad ananda namostute. Sanatana Goswami, who said so many things in explained so many things, great depths of devotional service revealed by Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But at the end of the Bhagavatamrita, the whole book is to reveal the glories of the Bhagavatam, not to supersede it, be a substitute. It's to lead us toward the Bhagavatam. And then he offers his prayer to the Bhagavatam, the one we recite every morning. You're my friend. You're my only deliverer, my only salvation, my only shelter. Prabhupada would give so many practical analogies to support his preaching, to make points, not just on shastric evidence, you know, the scripture says this, believe it or else. But modern faithless people don't accept that. Surrender to Krishna because the Gita says that, because the Bhagavatam says that. Chant Krishna's names because the Bhagavatam says Nam Sankirtan is the means for this age. But faithless people don't accept shastric evidence. So Prabhupada's preaching also was fortified with logical argument. And he used so many analogies in his preaching. But where did he get the bulk of those analogies? From the Bhagavatam. Many of them are right there in the text of the Bhagavatam. Even the practical preaching. Krishna says, Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vivastito Gyatva. You should understand, you should recognize the Shastra, which for us is the Gita and the Bhagavatam especially, as your source of Pramana. What is Pramana technically? Yeah, that's non-technical definition. You can, you know, a lawyer can talk about pramana, but the original origin of pramana is not in the lower courts, but it goes back to the ancient science of epistemology, or what's called pramana shastra. Epistemology is a Western term, meaning philosophical investigation into how you can know something. Can you actually know anything for real? And how can you know it? This is a philosophical investigation. And it was pursued by Gautama Rishi and his followers in the Nyaya Shastra. So it is also, the basic concept is pramana. Pramana means valid knowledge. To know something correctly, correct knowledge is called pramana. Jnanam is more general. Jnanam can be right or wrong. You can have an idea, it can be right, it can be wrong. Jnanam just means consciousness, awareness. But awareness can be deluded or wrong. But correct understanding, that's called pramana. And the means by which you can get correct knowledge is called pramana. That's what pramana means. Means of correct understanding. And then they're identified. A number of different kinds of means. The different schools of traditional Indian philosophy recognize different numbers and different lists of these pramanas. In our school, in the Vedanta school, our philosophical affiliation is with the Vedanta school. In the Vedanta school, three pramanas, three means of knowing, are recognized: pratyaksha, anumana, and shabda. What you see with your senses, direct perception, and logical inference, and third, the authority of verbal testimony. There's ordinary verbal testimony. Your mother says that this man is your father. You don't have direct perception of the fact of that he's actually your father. You cannot prove it even logically. You accept it on the testimony of your mother, because my mother's an honest woman. She has no reason to cheat me on this. I believe her that this man is my father. My mother may not be an authority on quantum mechanics, but she's an authority on the question of who's my father. And I trust her on it. So she's apta, reliable authority on that matter. The Vedas are reliable authority on things that we cannot know by other means. To know the other world and the higher realities, we accept the testimony of the Vedas. That is transcendental shabda pramana. Aparusheya, beyond any ordinary human authority. So that's pramana. Pramana means valid means of valid knowledge, standard means of getting correct knowledge. And Krishna says you should take to Arjuna, you should take the Shastra as your pramana. Not just the ideas coming out of your own head, or not what somebody, your friends and family tell you, not what you can deduce by the laws of logic, or what you see with your own eyes, but the Shastra. And not just for pie in the sky philosophical questions that have nothing to do with real life, but for practical questions, you should go to the Shastra to know correctly. And know correctly what? Karya karyam. What should be done and what not should not be done. In practical questions of everyday life, you have to make decisions. What to do and what not to do. You have to base your decisions on Shastra. That is what Krishna wants his devotees to do. So, these two bases of our spiritual life, only basis on which we can have a real spiritual life in Kali Yuga. Association of Vaishnavas, without their protection, we have no shelter. And we have no potency. And without the direction of Shastra, we have no good intelligence. These two are required. And we are required to hold on firmly. Religiere is the Latin term. Religion means to hold on. There may be theoretical argument about whether we're supposed to be like monkey babies or cat babies, letting the mother, like the cat baby, letting the mother take the trouble, and she just grabs us by the neck in her mouth and pulls us along. Or the monkey baby who has to hold on. But in this aspect, we have to hold on tight to the association of Vaishnavas and the Shastra. If we let go out of carelessness or out of having developed a bad attitude because of having committed aparadhas, if we give up the association of Vaishnavas, we lose the taste for it. I don't like those Vaishnavas. I like to avoid them. Then our spiritual life is as good as finished. And also, if we give up taking shelter of Shastra, to take shelter of Shastra, you have to work hard. You have to study the Shastra. You have to think about it. You have to read it and think about it and preach it. If you want the knowledge to come alive, you should share it with others. So we have to make a positive endeavor to stay always in touch with the Shastra, because this is our shelter. Some people can't read books, or because they're too dull, or they're too passionate to sit down and read books. But somebody has to read the books and share that knowledge with those who can't, because that's the only real basis. These two things are the only real basis for spiritual life in Kali Yuga. Okay, so are there any questions or comments?
Yes, Germany.
Usually people like to be, to look beautiful, healthy, strong, and Putana had this power to be nice, you can see, but she just turned into a beautiful woman for some moment. Why she didn't choose one to stay forever?
Because usually, very often the tantrics, they sacrifice their beauty. Because they're engaged in sinful activities in their tantric rituals, because they've got sinful motives and they're doing abominable things in order to get their power by their mystic rituals. Very often their bodies become deformed, diseased, ugly. It's a reaction to their tamasic activities. A person who's engaged in sinful activities, he becomes ugly and weak. So she could muster the strength by her, mystic tricks to become beautiful for a short time only, because she's been deprived of whatever beauty and strength and bodily integrity she had before. You can see that in many tantrics.
Yeah,
Jambu. Hanuman Prasad. Well, okay, it's a sort of different topic. You mean now in the fall?
Yeah.
Vamshivata. In Vrindavan. Vrindavan Forest. Krishna never lived in Vrindavan. So many devotees are living in Vrindavan. Krishna never lived there. He went there to play sometimes with his friends in Ramanreti, and then he went to dance with the gopis for the Rasa dance on the shore of the Jamuna at Vamshivata. You went there, no? Vamshivata?
Where is Vamshivata? Is it by Kaliya Raga?
You go past, behind and past, to the left, to the right side, past Keshika, yeah.
Is there buildings there
now? There's a small ashram, there's a, ask anybody, they can show you. Okay, but you can find it easily, everybody knows where it is. Yeah.
Today is the
There's fall. Is fall. Actually, it's having Rasa dances all the time. But these are the official big ones. And today is the fall season. Rasa dance. Yeah.
And also, it's Murari Gupta's appearance.
Murari Gupta, yes. Okay. Yeah, one of the principal and most early recognized associates of Lord Chaitanya. He lived with Lord Chaitanya all his life, a family friend. I think he's the same age as Lord Chaitanya. But in his youth, Lord Chaitanya was not recognized, even by his own associates. Yogamaya covered them over and they didn't remember him. Murari Gupta was one of the first to remember who Lord Chaitanya was, and again act like his servant. He wasn't a brahmana. He was a doctor, physician by occupation, but a very good physician. He worked for the king, so he must have been one of the best doctors in the country. And a very close associate of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya did not advise him to give up his occupation or to give up his family life. He told him, you go on and practice your medicine, but you should cure your patients not only of their material disease, but of this bhava-roga also, this disease of material existence. Then you've done your job. It was Murari Gupta who was... first of all, he was actually a devotee of Lord Ramachandra. Lord Chaitanya to test him, and because it's just like a sannyasi has to preach to all the brahmacharis, never get married. You know? But he knows a lot of them are going to get married anyway. And you know, that's life. But his job is to discourage them all from ever getting married. Like that, Lord Chaitanya has to tell everybody, worship only Radha Krishna. But he expects that some of his devotees are attached to other forms of Krishna. So Murari Gupta was very attached to Lord Ramachandra. Actually, he's an incarnation of Hanuman. So it's natural. And Lord Chaitanya, in fun, told him, give this up. I'm giving you the Gopal, you know, the Radha Krishna mantra. You chant this and you worship them. So Murari Gupta went home and spent the whole night trying to carry out that order. And he couldn't do it. And he came back in the morning very discouraged, ready to be sent to hell. And he confessed, I cannot give up the feet of Lord Raghunath. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy with him. He said, this is a, I don't remember the exact word, this is a, you know, a proper servant who never gives up the service of his master. Lord Chaitanya was satisfied that this was the way that Murari Gupta passed his test. He wouldn't give up his devotion to Lord Ramachandra. Anyway, he's a participant. You can read in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's a participant in many of the activities of Lord Chaitanya when he lived in Navadvipa. And he wrote. He kept notes about these early grasped pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And this is called his Kadacha, or his notebook. What we have nowadays under that title is probably spurious. We probably don't have the original book. But both Vrindavan Das Thakur and his Chaitanya Bhagavat and Krishna's Kaviraj both relied on this as one of their prime sources of information. Because they were not present to see most of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Krishna's Kaviraj was not. He heard from Raghunath Das, who was present, his Shiksha Guru, and from Swarup Damodar. Krishna's Kaviraj heard about these pastimes he didn't see. But he also read about many of them in Murari Gupta's notebook. But what is published nowadays is probably not the original book, almost certainly. Okay, thank you. Yes, please.
I have two questions more.
Yes.
Can you explain more about, you mentioned Vaishnava Tantra? And secondly, why sometimes more emphasize Shabda Praman than Pratyaksha? Like sometimes even by explanation of the what is the like rejecting Pratyaksha completely.
Okay. The Pancharatra, and some other books too, it's not only Pancharatra, but Pancharatra is the most prominent Vaishnava Tantra. It's Tantra because it's not Vedic, it's not original Vedas. We're not following the original system of Vedic sacrifice. In the Pancharatra, what is taught is the method of worshipping the deity and chanting mantras. Meditation and worship by those means. There are even older scriptures like the Vaikanasa, which is Vedic text, but that's also similar tantra. And there may be some others beside the Vaishnava Pancharatra. But this is the primary. And there are many Pancharatras. Narada Pancharatra is just one of them, but the most prominent. The Sri Vaishnavas rely on many, you know, dozens of different Pancharatras. And hundreds of them are still available. And they all are basically on the topics of how to worship the deity, how to chant mantras, because the two go together. You need the mantras to chant. And then how to take initiation, because you can't chant until you get initiation. And how to build temples, how to, you know, all the aspects of deity worship. And then some things about cosmology, about the structure of the universe. Actually, many of the instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave, this is to Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, about the different expansions of Vishnu and so on, are found in the Ahirbhudna Samhita, one of the Vaishnava Pancharatras.
I think sometimes
Lord
Chaitanya says that I was in lecture in Krishnavarma temple when Sunir devotee, he explained there is special Vaishnava Tantra which devotees can perform different anarthas. Like,
I don't know what book that is. I don't know if we need to do that. I don't think we need any other books besides Gita and Bhagavatam to get ourselves free from all inertas. We got in our bead bag, we got all the tantra we need right there. Yeah, we don't need other rituals or worshipping demigods or doing magic things to get rid of our inertas. We should chant our rounds nicely and study the Bhagavatam and the Gita. That will get rid of our inertas and serve the devotees.
You mentioned something about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that he explained with Krishna we want different Krishna pastimes.
Yes, but that means we want to meditate on these pastimes. We're reading them right now in the 10th canto. That's where you go. Go to the 10th canto, read about Krishna killing the demons, and that will destroy these different inertas that Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out. The second question was about
protection.
Oh, what? I don't know who. Anybody here is against pratyaksha? You just don't like it? You don't like the process of it relying on direct perception? It's like Gandhari, she voluntarily put a blindfold on. So if you don't like pratyaksha praman, you should put on blindfolds and stick cotton in your ears. Don't listen or see anything. Yeah. But the thing is, we do rely on pratyaksha. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. The forest things and the
yes.
But we cannot read in Shastra.
Right. How do you read in Shastra? What's your access to Shastra? You have to use your eyes or your ears to even access the Shastra. Then you could say, and I've heard devotees saying, how do you know this is the real Manusmriti? How do you know this is actually Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita? You know, maybe it's not the real text. How do you know this is really the Bhagavatam? Yeah, I mean, you can doubt your senses to a point of ridicule, this absurdity. But ultimately, we have to use pratyaksha even to have access to Shabda Praman, to scripture. And you have to sometimes use logic to understand the scripture. But our ultimate, the one ultimate authority that can overrule all the others and in which all the others depend is Shastra. Shabda Praman for us is the primary means, but it can't be the only means, because you can't even have access to the Shabda Praman without using the other two. Okay, so we're not completely against using Pratyaksha. There's once the materialistic school of Charvaka Muni, atheistic materialistic school. They don't accept anything but pratyaksha. They don't accept logic or testimony. So the joke is, the verse says, my dear follower of Charvaka, why are you so upset thinking your wife is pregnant by some other man? You have no direct perception of it, you know, and you're deducing something, but you don't accept deduction. So don't be upset. There was, yes, I agree with you.
Thank you.
You mean, who's performing? Like dancers?
No, by some Vaishnavas, I don't know, from Darsana.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, but they're actually dancing?
Yeah, dancing and performing some Vidhan with islands.
Okay, that's okay, but I don't think that you will enter the rasa dance just by watching their performance. Yeah, maybe nice, and maybe you know, remind you of Krishna. If they're doing a good job and they're not offensive, if they're not just too materialistic. But if you actually want to enter the rasa dance, I mean, remember that Goddess Lakshmi couldn't enter. Narada Muni couldn't get nearby. You know, so actually he was turned into a gopi too. But I don't know. Anyway, it's not easy to actually enter the rasa dance. We don't want just entertainment, you know, to go watch the show. We want to enter the show. And to do that, you have to become very specially qualified. And it's not just by being in the audience at the dance, you know, the dance performance. It's not that kind of dance performance. This is intimate service of Radha and Krishna. We have to become properly qualified to do that. That's what we're doing here. We're sitting here and not going out to watch the, you know, the performances. You know, we're foregoing the entertainment because we're trying to become trained up to actually enter. Yeah. Then we can dance forever. Yeah, not just for a couple of hours. Watch somebody else dance for a couple of hours.
What is the meaning by that?
The real fun is to dance, to watch someone else dance. What's fun in that?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't recognize it. You know, it's entertainment. It may be good entertainment. You know, it's about Krishna. But it's not our sadhana. Maybe they have an idea it's their sadhana, but it's not the sadhana taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and by the acharyas coming in his line. I don't think so. You can show me if one of our acharyas teaches that as a sadhana. Yeah. It's good business. You know, the families maintain their themselves by doing that business, and it's popular entertainment, and it's traditional, but it's not our sadhana. We're not against it. We're not saying it's bad, but it's not our, not the way that we actually enter the rasa dance. Yes, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. Anything else? Yes, Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Prabhu. Okay. Yeah.
I have a
comment.
Comment.
Yeah. He was asking about the methodology for eliminating certain anarthas, and you said we have the anartha eliminator right here.
Yeah. Yes.
Srila Prabhupada talks about that also. About how, you know, the ears have a direct channel to the heart, and that by listening and by hearing, the anarthas in the heart are cleared away. And this act can actually be perceived. If you chant and you chant and you chant with very strong attention, you can feel, it's a little bit mundane as far as some feeling, but you can feel the energy of the mantra going to the heart. You can actually perceive this. Smashing against your heart and breaking away something. It's pretty interesting. It's a practice for some time like that. But Srila Prabhupada talks like that. The ears are the channels to the heart. So through the ears you can break away by chanting the anarthas in the heart.
So we have very subtle, potent, effective technology.
Yeah.
It's just sound. You know, it doesn't cost anything. No apparatus required. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.